This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Flying foxes are giant fruit bats and are one of the most threatened groups of bats in the world, with their numbers declining sharply due to hunting and habitat loss, among other reasons. And they play a critical dual role in forest maintenance and regeneration as pollinators and seed dispersers, and are particularly important for pollinating durian trees. So Rimba's project Taropus has been working on flying fox conservation in collaboration with Pahilitan since 2012. And this collaboration has resulted in a conservation roadmap, which serves as a guidance document for flying fox conservation here in Peninsular Malaysia. And I'm going to find out more about this from Dr. Shima Abdul Aziz. She's the president of RIMBA. She's also a conservation ecologist, and she's the principal investigator at Project Taropus. Welcome, Shima. How are you today?
Hi, Juliet. Thanks a lot. I'm doing good. Thank you for having me here today.
My pleasure. I mean, we last caught up, you know, it's already been 2 years, almost 3 years, back in 2017, to discuss what I mentioned about, you know, the role of flying foxes in durian pollination ecology. But, you know, can you remind us again about why you were interested in research around flying fox conservation ecology?
Well, I became interested in flying foxes because when I found out that we had these giant fruit bats living in Malaysia, in our forests, in our mangroves, I realized that they must be playing a really important role in maintaining our ecosystem health. And these bats are, you know, they're particularly special because they have this dual role in the ecosystem.
That's right.
They're helping to disperse seeds because they feed on fruits, but then at the same time, they also feed on the nectar of flowers, so they also function as pollinators. So they're doing both roles simultaneously in the ecosystem. And because they're such big bats, they can carry large fruits for very long distances, and they can transfer seeds and pollen across very long distances. So they must be very important. They must be playing a very important role in different ecosystems. And yet we knew next to nothing about what they were actually doing here in Malaysia and helping to maintain the health of our ecosystems. And so I really wanted to find out more about, you know, what's going on with our flying foxes.
Yeah. And, you know, so I guess, you know, it's safe to say that our flying foxes are very poorly studied. And why do you think that is?
I don't know. I really wish I knew. I mean, I think they're such fascinating creatures, and I don't understand why people are not lining up to study them.
Yeah, maybe it's that whole they're not as charismatic as, let's say, the tiger, for example, right?
It could be, yes.
Yeah.
I think there's always a little bit of a negative image or stigma associated with bats.
Mm-hmm.
And also because they are creatures of the night, people don't see them that often, and so they're a little bit invisible, I guess, and people don't really think about them.
Mm-hmm.
I know I didn't used to think of bats until I really discovered how awesome and amazing they are. And so I guess, you know, it's easier to identify with something that looks more majestic and more magnificent, like a tiger or an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when it comes to bats, maybe people just have been used to not really thinking of bats as being important.
That's
and
right.
So there is, I guess, this tendency to just assume that they're not really playing much of a role.
Yeah. And, you know, because I guess this, when people think of bats, they think of colonies of bats and so many of them like a swarm, right? It's hard to imagine that they are threatened.
Yes. Yes. I think that's also part of the problem, because when people see bats, a lot of the time they see a big group of bats, and they think, oh, there's still a lot of them out there.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
You know, if we lose a few, that's not such a problem. If we lose half of them, some people may even think that's a good thing. But one of the things that researchers have found is that for flying foxes especially, they need to exist in these really large numbers, you know, in colonies of thousands or maybe tens of thousands, in order to continue playing their role in maintaining ecosystem health.
Mm-hmm.
When the number of flying foxes actually drops below a certain threshold abundance, they actually stop carrying out those ecological roles.
Oh, really?
And they actually stop being effective in the ecosystem. And this has to do with their social behavior, their social organization, because flying foxes, they're what's called a colonial roosting species. So they really do like to all hang out together in big colonies.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but at the same time, they also argue and fight with each other a lot. And it's actually this fighting behavior that is helpful in the ecosystem when they feed. Because the more they fight with each other, the more they move around and they travel longer distances. And that's when they carry the seeds and pollen further away. Mm-hmm. And that's how you get actually healthy transfer of pollen and seeds. Mm-hmm. And when there are less bats, there's a lot of food, there's not that much to fight over, they stop traveling so far.
And thus the seed dispersal and the pollination stops as much.
That's right.
Gosh. And we do find flying foxes here in Malaysia, but I think, and it's known as kloang in BM, if I'm correct, right?
Yes,
but
correct.
I don't think a lot of people even realize they're here.
Yeah. And to a certain extent, I think it's because their numbers have declined so drastically. So I think we're the generation that's already not being able to see these kind of sites anymore. So I and my team, we've been going around the whole of Peninsula Malaysia trying to track down these last remaining colonies of flying foxes, trying to figure out where they still exist. Mm-hmm. And wherever we go, when we talk to people of the older generation, you know, people who were kids growing up in the 60s and 70s, they all keep telling us, oh, there used to be so many flying foxes here. You know, there were thousands of them. They would fill the sky every evening and they were so predictable. You could even tell the time. Wow. By their emergence every evening. Mm-hmm. And now you just don't see them anymore. They're gone.
I've never seen one.
Yeah. And so, you know, you really start to realize the scale of the problem because just within, what, one, two generations?
Yeah.
These flying foxes, they've disappeared from the public memory already in Peninsula Malaysia.
But, you know, based on your research, I mean, where can they be found now? And, I mean, do you have a sort of an idea of their population?
Well, what we're finding is that on the mainland, it's becoming almost impossible to even find flying foxes anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't really get a lot of reliable reports of flying fox roosts on the mainland anymore. Okay. Even when people report sightings, it usually tends to coincide with specific seasons when there are more food resources available for the bats. What we are finding is that wherever there might still be roosts, they're already located in very inaccessible areas that are very difficult to get to. Mm-hmm. And we think the bats are deliberately doing this because they're really trying to avoid humans. Oh. They don't want to be found.
Clever bats, though.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, further research is needed to kind of, you know, find out their eating and roosting habits as well. And that's going to be even more difficult as they kind of retreat from you almost, right?
Yeah, that's right. We know, we have a good idea of what habitats they need and what habitats are really critical to their survival. So in terms of roosting habits, there's not too much research that needs to be done for that in terms of informing conservation action. But definitely in terms of their diet, what food resources are important to them, we have still a very poor understanding of that in Peninsula Malaysia. Mm-hmm. We don't have a very clear idea of what dietary items they need, what's really important to them. And we really need to know that in order to identify what habitats are really functioning as important sources of food for these bats, because those will also need to be conserved. Mm-hmm. We know, for example, that mangroves are very, very important for flying foxes. And so any clearance of mangrove is going to be a critical threat to these flying foxes. Mm-hmm. But we just don't know enough yet about what they need. And so at this point, we really need a lot more ecological research on these bats.
Mm-hmm. And but we do know that they are losing their habitats, right, to things like deforestation. Do we know things like that for sure?
Well, deforestation does happen. We do know that the bats do go to feed in the forests. There are wild native food resources in the forests, both in terms of flowers and fruits that the bats do feed on. And we know this from research done in other countries, not in Malaysia. Okay. So we assume that there's a similar situation here in Malaysia. But in terms of forests, actually, we're still not doing too badly as a country, you know. So in Peninsula Malaysia, we still have relatively a lot more forest cover, native forest cover left compared to other countries in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. we're not doing too badly just yet in that aspect, but we do need to be vigilant to prevent more deforestation from happening and to maybe initiate reforestation efforts where possible in certain areas. But I think certainly one of the things that has been under the radar a bit more is really the clearance of mangroves. People are starting to highlight that more. It is now starting to become an issue that's getting more attention, which is good. But in the past, we've just already lost so much of our mangrove areas. And that's important not just for the flying foxes, but for so many other species, including marine species as well, and freshwater species as well.
That's right.
And so I think that's something that also really does need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. But what about some of the other threats that are faced by the flying foxes? You know, I mean, there's also trafficking of their meat, if I'm not mistaken. There's some.
Yes, yes. So this, again, was a very rampant problem in the past.
Okay.
I think maybe now there's less of it just because it's so hard to find flying foxes. There's less flying foxes to hunt now. Mm-hmm. But in the past, the hunting pressure was tremendous and people hunted with guns. Mm. And because there were so many flying foxes filling the sky in the past, it was easy to just shoot somewhere and then, you know, you'd get a few flying foxes.
Right.
And flying foxes they seemed to be in really high demand back then because of the meat.
Mm-hmm.
People seemed to really, really like eating flying fox meat back then. And there was also this belief, there still is this belief in traditional Chinese medicine that flying fox meat can be used to cure asthma. And so it was also seen as a medicinal resource. And people felt that they should have a right to hunt flying foxes back then.
Mm-hmm.
And there were attempts made by Perhelitan, the Department of Wildlife and National Parks, to actually regulate the hunting, to try and control it so that the impact wouldn't be so bad. But I think back in those days, we didn't have data on the population, so we couldn't tell what was the actual impact of the hunting pressure and how much hunting was actually still at a safe level.
Sure.
And so because there was perhaps just too much hunting going on, the numbers just declined so sharply because this is a species or this is a group of animals that's very slow to reproduce. So, you know, they're very long lived. They can live for as long as a cat or even longer, maybe 20 to 30 years. So they, you know, they don't breed very fast. They usually only have one young per year.
Okay.
And so their numbers just cannot recover fast enough. They cannot bounce back fast enough to deal with, you know, levels of very high hunting pressure.
Right. And are there any other threats? I mean, I know that they're not very popular with humans, you know, and there is, of course, that human-wildlife conflict affecting them as well.
Yes, yes. So there have been anecdotal reports that flying foxes, especially in the past, they would come into farmers' fruit orchards at night, and then they would eat up fruit and they would damage fruit, and this would cause financial losses.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this is another aspect that's really very poorly understood in Malaysia because no research has been done on it.
Mm-hmm.
So because there have been no attempts to actually conduct empirical studies on this issue, we don't actually know what's actually happening. So where are these flying foxes coming into people's farms to feed? What are they actually feeding on? How much damage and financial loss does it actually create?
Mm-hmm.
We don't actually have data on any of this. And again, we need to really be able to study this issue and then try and come up with new methods to exclude flying foxes from farms or deter them from coming to fruit trees so that we can protect people's fruit trees and protect people's livelihoods without actually killing the bats.
Mm-hmm. But that is the more difficult solution, I suppose, right? Rather than just kind of exterminating them, unfortunately.
Yes, but what we're trying to make people see through Project Tropus and our work is that there are consequences when you just take the easy way out and you just exterminate them.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, there will be effects elsewhere and you may not feel them immediately, but, you know, over the long term, then there might be more negative consequences in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if it's affecting the seed dispersal and the pollination, then ultimately, you know, there is harm that has been done to the ecosystem, which will then come back to also affect human well-being.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, your research from 2017 about them, you know, playing such an important role in durian pollination. I mean, imagine Malaysians not having your durians.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So what we found through our research is that flying foxes are actually one of the few very truly effective pollinators of durian trees. Because durian flowers, they're night-blooming flowers. And so they actually require nocturnal pollinators. And also, the durian tree itself, it's what's known as a self-incompatible tree. Mm-hmm. So that means that a durian tree cannot use its own pollen to produce healthy, mature fruits. So if a durian tree does self-pollinate using its own pollen, a lot of the time, the fruits that form will drop off while they're still small. Okay. So they don't actually have a chance to really develop into healthy, mature, ripe fruit. And so durian trees really need animal pollinators to help cross-pollinate, to bring pollen around from one tree to another. Mm-hmm. And also, even when you see the flowers opening in the early afternoon or in the morning, it doesn't mean that the flowers are actually ready for pollination.
Right.
So what research has found is even when the flowers open earlier, the effective pollination period doesn't start until much later in the early evening, mm-hmm. which is when the bats come out.
Come out, right.
So even when the flowers are open, you might see bees coming to the flowers to feed, you might see birds coming to the flowers, but it's not the effective pollination period yet. You know, the pollen is not yet ready to be released and transferred and received. And so these animals that come to the durian flowers during the day, they're not actually pollinating.
It's the flying foxes. It's the ones coming at
it's
night.
The bats.
It's the bats.
Yeah.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Shima Abdul Aziz. She's a conservation ecologist. She's the president of RIMBA, and she's also the principal investigator of Project Taropus. And we're discussing flying foxes, well, particularly in Peninsular Malaysia. We're going to continue that discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and in the studio with me today is Dr. Shima Abdul Aziz. She's the president of RIMBA. She's the principal investigator of Project Taropus, and she's also a conservation ecologist. And we're discussing flying foxes in Malaysia, but also generally bats in Malaysia and how they don't really get a lot of attention, but you know they do play a very important role. Basically for all of us, right? They play
yeah.
a very important role. So,
yeah,
you know,
that's right.
Before the break, we were talking about some of the threats that they face, correct? Mm-hmm. How are they actually, are they protected under Malaysian law at all?
Well, the situation in Malaysia is a little bit complicated because, as we know, there are always three different sets of laws that apply.
Yes.
So in Peninsular Malaysia, flying foxes are protected under the Wildlife Conservation Act 2010. Previously, they were allowed to be hunted, so you could actually hunt flying foxes legally. Mm-hmm. But the Department of Wildlife and National Parks are taking steps to actually give them totally protected status and to completely stop any legal hunting of flying foxes. Mm-hmm. So that is currently in the process of being done. Mm-hmm. And we're just waiting. Hopefully, if these amendments finally get passed in Parliament, then that will be official. Mm-hmm. But they have already been accorded protected status for quite some time already in Peninsular Malaysia. Mm-hmm. In Sarawak, pretty much all bats are protected. Hunting is not allowed of flying foxes in Sarawak, so it's not legal in Sarawak. Mm-hmm. In Sabah, it's a little bit more complicated because there's one species, the large flying fox, that is somewhat protected but can still be legally hunted with a license, similar to the situation in Peninsular Malaysia.
Okay.
But the law in Sabah does not actually mention the other species, the island flying fox. So the status of that species is a little bit of a question mark.
Okay, all right. But is this enough, you think? I mean, it doesn't seem to be helping with their numbers, unfortunately. But, you know, what more can we possibly do, I suppose?
Yeah, well, one of the issues with hunting is that you really need to have good data in order to inform how much hunting is actually sustainable, what levels of hunting are acceptable in order for the population to be able to bounce back. Mm-hmm. And for Malaysia, we simply have not had that kind of data okay. in the past because there have been no studies done on it. And while legal protection is definitely important, and it's a very important first step. We also need to be able to reach out to people, to hunters, to farmers, to local communities, to understand why they hunt, and to try and work together with them to make them see what are the effects of hunting, and if unsustainable hunting is carried out, if it's unregulated, the impact can be negative, and it's not just affecting the flying foxes, it can affect people as well, because if it's affecting the pollination of durian, if it's affecting seed dispersal, if it's affecting the maintenance of ecosystems and ecosystem health, then it will eventually come back to affect humans negatively as well.
What I keep hearing you saying is that there's just not enough research, right? You know, it's
that's
just,
right.
You know, that seems to be the bottom line, isn't it? They're just so poorly studied. And I guess, I mean, what we do hear of flying foxes in the media, for example, you know, it tends to be negative things, you know, that they're little disease carrying, you know, they're going to wipe us all out, all this kind of horrible things you hear about them. But I know that is not necessarily the case. That is not the case, in fact.
Yeah.
That must infuriate you as well as a as a principal investigator of this project. But, you know, as a biologist, as an ecologist, you know, I mean, what would you hope, you know, that the media, when they do report about flying foxes, what would you hope from them?
Yeah, this is definitely a huge problem for bat conservationists across the world, not just in Malaysia.
All right.
And it is a challenge that we are constantly having to work hard to overcome, because there's been such a negative image associated with bats around the world. And also, you know, to some extent, that's because of historical associations of bats with the scary dark nighttime and vampires and Halloween. And a lot of that is actually to do with Western culture, because when we look at cultures of the Asia Pacific, bats have traditionally been portrayed very positively, and they're actually very positive symbols in our part of the world. But as it stands right now, most people associate bats with negative things. And it doesn't help that there's a lot of association of bats with diseases that can harm humans. And this is something that has created a lot of problems for bat conservationists, because we try to promote bats as being important and beneficial, and we try to make people see why bats are important. But it's very hard to overcome the negative associations that have already been made. To a certain extent, it's because there hasn't been enough research done on the beneficial aspects of bats. And so we don't understand enough about how bats are actually important and how they help us. But when research has been done on viruses and diseases, the way it's been picked up and portrayed by the media is also not very helpful to the cause, because there's always a lot of exaggeration, a lot of speculation, a lot of scaremongering that's not necessarily based on hard data or evidence. Sometimes there's no direct link, but perhaps it's just been easy to jump on that sensational aspect and play it up a bit. And we get a lot of this kind of messaging that comes out in the media that portrays bats in a very negative light and makes it seem like bats are scary, they're a threat, they're a risk to human well-being, when a lot of the time that's not the case. Bats have coexisted with humans for thousands of years. And for the longest time, they've had a very long track record of safe coexistence. And there have historically not been, you know, any spillovers of viruses from bats to human or outbreaks of disease or epidemics. And what a lot of researchers are seeing, a lot of the researchers who work on things like disease ecology or virology, when these outbreaks do happen, it's usually humans that are causing it to happen. And a lot of the time it has to do with the expansion of industrialized agriculture, development that encroaches into bat habitats, that brings, you know, bats out into contact with humans or with domestic animals. And then it creates this perfect storm of conditions that really just facilitates viruses jumping from bats to domestic animals or to humans, and then just spreading. And it's very important to understand that, again, this is something that's been caused by humans and unsustainable development, it's not the fault of the bats that this has happened. But a lot of the time, what happens is the scaremongering that takes place in media reports and articles highlights the bats as being a scary source of these viruses and diseases. And the whole message or the lesson about how what we really need is to promote more sustainable development, you know, to conserve bat habitats and to prevent this kind of contact between humans and bats and keep the bats safe in their habitats.
Exactly.
That message is usually lost. And what we really hope for is that there needs to be greater cooperation between bat conservationists, bat ecologists, and the virologists and the disease ecologists who are working on these public health issues. We really need a more coordinated effort where we work together to address the issue more holistically and to really work together in getting the right messages out to the public so that they understand what are the right ways to coexist with bats in a safe way. And that, you know, bats are not something to be afraid of. You know, there are ways that we can prevent these kind of disease outbreaks from happening without having to kill bats, without having to paint bats in a negative light.
Mm-hmm. And again, you know, the media also needs to stop with the clickbaity sort of, you know, headlines. And, you know, I'm saying that as somebody in the media. I know that's something we all need to do, you know, but it's so layered. You know, there's so many different dimensions to the whole issue. It's not just, okay, let's kill all the bats and all problems are solved. It doesn't work that way.
Exactly. I do believe that the media has a very big, very important role to play in this, in helping us to get more positive messages out there. There needs to be more responsible reporting and coverage of these kind of issues, because these negative messages can be very harmful to the cause.
Yeah. Well, let's turn our focus now to that conservation roadmap that we were talking about earlier. You know, this is something that you've worked together with Pahilitan to come up with. You know, okay, I mean, what exactly is a conservation roadmap, you know, for somebody unfamiliar? And I mean, could you explain what's happening there?
Okay, so we decided to call this a conservation roadmap because we wanted to come up with a preliminary set of guidelines that would provide information on what are the necessary research and conservation actions for flying foxes in Peninsular Malaysia. Uh-huh. And so we really wanted this to be a guidance document that people could refer to if anyone is interested in working on flying foxes, in conducting research on flying foxes, or in really helping to support conservation of flying foxes. They have this set of guidelines now which they can refer to, which really tells them what are the important aspects that they should be focusing on and where all the efforts and resources should be invested in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you know, who is this document meant for? I mean, who do you hope will actually take this and use it as a tool, as a guide?
Well, this document is really targeted at the conservation community, and that could really mean anyone. It could be academic researchers working in universities who want to help collect more data to guide conservation. It could be actual conservation practitioners, NGOs out there who would like to take action to help protect flying foxes. It could be the government departments who also have a role to play in enforcement and monitoring. It could be the policymakers who can help enact stronger laws to help protect flying foxes. But also, if the general public are interested in flying foxes, they can also refer to this document as well to learn more about flying foxes and the situation of our flying foxes here in Peninsular Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So we hope that anyone and everyone who's interested in flying foxes and who would like to help do something for flying foxes can really just take this document and refer to it as a guide.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, what are some of your hopes from for the future of the flying fox? You know, based on all that research, all the research that you are continuing to do, but especially that's, you know, within this roadmap that you've produced.
Well, first of all, we would really like it for more people in the country to realize, first of all, that we have flying foxes.
Exactly.
Because I think a lot of people now, especially the younger generation, are just not aware.
Yeah.
And we want people to realize how important flying foxes are, how cool they are, how amazing they are, and what an incredibly important role they're playing in our country, in our ecosystems. And we want people to really feel motivated to actually become maybe join the cause and become part of a movement to really highlight and protect flying foxes of Malaysia.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for anyone who's listening, you know, how would you like them to sort of to use this, you know, as a tool as well to kind of like take some action, you know, maybe like to rally the policymakers, as you said, or, you know, because the bats, of course, are one species in a larger context, right?
Yeah.
But how can we use them as an example of protecting a whole bunch of other species as well?
Yeah, so that's what we're trying to do with flying foxes in Project Tropus. Flying foxes are kind of our flagship animal group, but we're hoping that by promoting their conservation and taking actions to conserve and protect them, it will also then trickle down, it will have an umbrella effect and help protect other bats and their habitats as well. Mm-hmm. So for example, for flying foxes, they're important durian pollinators. We know that there are other fruit bat species that are also important durian pollinators. So if people can understand that it's important to conserve fruit bats in order to maintain the pollination services for the durian industry, then hopefully people will realize it's not just about the flying foxes. It's also about the rainforests and the mangroves, but then it's also about the tiny little nectar bats that live in caves. And so it's important to also protect the caves and the limestone habitats that those bats need to survive. And when you really have this holistic landscape approach, because flying foxes, they need huge landscapes. Yeah. They need huge areas in order to survive. When you can protect all these different ecosystems at such a huge landscape level, you're also helping to protect everything else that depends on those habitats and those ecosystem interactions. And this includes even the marine environment, because if you're protecting the mangroves, the flying foxes are also helping to maintain the health of the mangroves. And that then also benefits fisheries. It benefits coral reefs as well. So everything is actually all linked up together.
Everything's interconnected, yeah, as they say. Yeah. So, you know, I know you're going to continue working on this, but I mean, what are some future projects that you've got lined up, you know, especially with regard to flying foxes and bat conservation?
Well, we hope to do a lot more public outreach this year and the next year.
Okay.
Our goal is to really mainstream bats in the public consciousness and to make people see that bats are cool. And, you know, we should love bats. And, you know, let's all work together to help protect bats. And we really want to be able to share the results of our science with the public and to really help people see why bats are important and why we should care about bats. So we're hoping to do some campaigns this year and the next year, and we're really hoping to find ways we can reach out to a wider audience. And so that's definitely one way the general public can help also, just in spreading the message, helping to get the word around. We need a lot more positive messages and positive images of bats out there. So if there are any artists who would like to collaborate with us, we want to create really amazing, awesome images of bats doing the things that they do best. And we want to really be able to make people feel like bats are something that are, you know, they're a part of our Malaysian culture, which they were in the past. You know, they've just been kind of forgotten. And we really want to find a way to bring bats back.
Okay, so you just mentioned you want to collaborate with artists and, you know, all sorts of different people, the virologists as well, hopefully, right?
Yes.
But, you know, who are the other groups that you're hoping to work with? So many people are involved, you know, in this, in the existence of flying foxes or, you know, in preserving their existence. So who are some
That's
of the
right.
other people that you'd like to work with?
Yeah, so for flying fox conservation, we really, really need a holistic approach, and we need to be able to reach out to all sorts of stakeholders, you know, different segments of society. And one of the things which we really think is important for flying fox conservation is to conduct further research on their pollination services, because we know now that they are actually important for durian pollination, which means that they're important for the durian farmers and the durian industry as a whole. And we really want to collect more data on that and on what kind of role they play, not just the flying foxes, the other fruit bats as well. We know already from research that's been done in Thailand that fruit bats are very important for the durian industry. We've conducted our own research on Tioman Island. That's where we first discovered the flying foxes are also really important for durian. And there's also new research that's being done. There's new data that's come out of Sulawesi in Indonesia also showing the same thing. Flying foxes are pollinating the durian trees there. And so they have this very important economic role to play. But what we realize is that a lot of that research, the information from that is not getting out to the people who need it the most, which is the farmers, the people in the industry, the policymakers. So we want to find a way we can really help to make that link, to link the information, the data with the people who need to know it. And what we're hoping to do this year is to really expand on our durian pollination research in partnership with the durian industry, in partnership with durian growers, so that we work together to conduct this research, to collect this data, and then we get the message out to a wider audience so that people can really understand, you know, why flying foxes are important and why flying fox and fruit bat conservation in general is important for the durian industry.
Mm-hmm. And it's a win situation for them. So, you know, there's nothing to lose in that sense. It's just going to produce better fruit and, I mean, just help with the production of their fruit, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And if there are any fruit farmers who are worried about other fruits that may suffer damage from flying foxes or other fruit bats, then we can also work together to conduct research on that and come up with the best methods to protect fruit trees without killing bats.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You have a very, very tough year ahead. It sounds like it, you know, a lot of work, but a lot of exciting work.
That's right. It's very exciting.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, if anyone would like to get in touch, I guess the best way to do that would be to head to the website, rimbaresearch.org.
That's right. Yep.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Dr. Shima Abdulaziz. She's the president of RIMBA. She is the principal investigator of Project Taropus, and she's also a conservation ecologist. And we were talking about the important need for conservation of flying foxes and also other bats in Peninsula Malaysia and also in Malaysia in general.
Yeah.
If you'd like to get in touch with her, you can search for their contact details at rimbaresearch.org. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.